I think it's correct to say that statistically, if one looks at the quantity of information that's told to us by the Torah in connection with the lives of the others, the Torah seems to be occupied to a much greater degree with the life of Yaakov Avinu than with the life of Avram and the life of Yitzchok. And even though Chazal tell us as a general statement that Maaseh Avos Simon Labanim, that whatever happened to the Avos is an indication of what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael in the future. In other words, the lives of the Avos was in the microcosm, or in the macrocosm, is going to be the story of Klal Yisrael until Bias HaMashiach. But Chazal seemed to place a special emphasis on the biography and the events that took place during the lifetime of Yaakov Avinu as being, perhaps even to a greater degree, a Simon Labonim than the biographies and the story of what happened to Avram and what happened to Yitzchok. And in fact, even though it's probably about 4,000 years since the demise of Yaakov Avinu, there are a lot of Mefarshim who, during the course of the years, as events took place, were able to pinpoint historical events that happened to Klal Yisrael and to say that the Maaseh Avos for these particular events was this particular event that happened in the life of Yaakov Avinu. Obviously, again, Yaakov Avinu happened in a microcosm, and the Klal Yisrael happens in a major way. Every single experience that Yaakov Avinu went through indicates something which is going to be a parallel experience which Klal Yisrael is going to have to go through. And if you just sort of like run through very superficially the biography of Yaakov Avinu, the sinner that the brothers had, that Esau had to Yaakov, the constant conflict that existed between Esau and Yaakov, the fact that Yaakov Avinu had to run away from Esau, the fact that even after he runs away from Esau, Eliphaz chases after him and basically takes away everything that he had, and he ends up penniless, the fact that he had to struggle and work to a ridiculous degree, constantly being swindled in the house of Lavan, the story of Shechem and Dinah, then the story of the Mechira of Yosef, and then the events that led to Yaakov Avinu having to go down to Mitzrayim, which he doesn't want to, and which he sees as being a very negative thing, but it ends up to be a very positive thing, because that's where he meets Yosef, and that's where Klal Yisrael eventually go through the Golus Mitzrayim that they have to go through in order to achieve Geula, which is the forerunner of the final Geula, etc., etc., etc. All these events are basically capsules of what's going to happen in the history of Klal Yisrael until the final days, the days of Mashiach. And in Parshas Vayechi, the Parsha that we're going to read on Shabbos, we actually get to the end of the story. We get to the end of the life of Yaakov Avinu. And basically what Parshas Vayechi is telling us is the last will and testament of Yaakov Avinu. This is the tzavo of Yaakov Avinu. This is what Yaakov Avinu's final instructions to his children before he leaves this world. We know, we see this in the Psukim very clearly, that the Parsha describes Yaakov Avinu who's sick. He's dying. He knows that he's dying. He knows that this is his final sickness. And he calls the children together in order to take leave from them. And he's going to now give them the brachas before he dies. Ish asher kibichosai birechaisam. And he's going to give each one a very individual bracha, which is going to be very suitable for that particular child. And again, we know from Chazal the brachas that he's giving to each and every one of his children is describing and is intimating a certain period of time that will exist later on in Jewish history. And in fact, each and every one of the children of Yaakov Avinu, each and every one of the Shvatim, represents a certain group that will exist within Klal Yisrael in the future. And it's necessary that each and every one of these groups should exist in the future. And Yaakov Avinu wants, that's his desire. He wants actually to finish up the story for them. He wants to tell them exactly what's going to happen and how the whole of world history is going to come to a happy solution. He wants to tell them what's going to happen b'achris hayomim, what's going to happen when Mashiach finally comes. And that's one of the main reasons why he calls them together. As the pasuk says, Vayikra Yaakov el Bonov, Yaakov calls together his children, Vayomer, and he says to them, Hayosfu, assemble yourselves together, gather yourselves together, Va'agid Elochem, and I will tell you, Eis Asher Yikra Eschem, exactly what's going to happen to you, Va'achris Hayomim, at the time when this phase of the world's existence will come to its natural conclusion through the coming of Mashiach. And there's a Gemara. Gemara happens to be in Psochim. There's a Gemara on this Pasuk. It's a Gemara in Psochim and Daphne and Vavon with base. And the Pasuk says, Bikesh Yaakov Legalis Levonov Esakets. He wanted to actually tell them in detail. I'll now tell you what's going to happen at the end of the period of history when Mashiach is going to come, and I'm actually going to tell you when Mashiach is going to come, that you should know when this event is going to take place. Then istalko mimena hashchina. But at that point, says the Gemara, when he wanted to tell them the kates, the achris hayomim, when Mashiach is going to come, the shchina suddenly disappears and the nevuah stops, and he can't continue. He can't carry on. And Chazal say, Omar, he said to himself, Shema chas v'shalom yesh b'mitosi psul. There must be something wrong here with my children that the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't want to allow me to be megala to them the kates. And the children obviously realize this, and Chazal continue, and Chazal say that Amru Leibonov, that they responded to this. What did they respond? What did they say to him? They said to him, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. K'shem she'ein belibcha elo echad. In the same way as you have one feeling towards all of us as a father, kach ein belibeinu elo echad. We also have one feeling towards each other. Baisa Shah. When Yaakov Avinu heard that, Pasach Yaakov Avinu Yoma, he immediately responded, Bor Shein Klei Machus Eli Olam Vaed. Very enigmatic Gemara, which doesn't really make much sense. What was the conversation that was going on here? What was happening here? There's a very famous Gemara in Chulin, which we all know, because we were taught it in kindergarten, even though the kindergarten teacher didn't tell us it was a Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Aleph on the base, but she told us the story. And the Gemara says that there seems to be a stira, a contradiction in the Psukim. Yaakov Avinu wants to sleep. Vayikach me avnei hamokam. So he decides to take a group of stones, which he will place around him, in order that this group of stones which he places around him should act as a protection against an attack by animals or whatever it may be. So what does the pasuk say? Vayikach that he took me avnei hamokam, in the plural form. He took a number of stones. And then the pasuk continues, and the pasuk says, Vayose meso evin, he placed the evin, asher som me rashesov, which he had put at his head. Says the Gemara, what's going on here? Initially the pasuk says that he took a number of stones, in the plural form. And then the pasuk says, Vayose meso evin, he only placed one stone. So either it was a number of stones or it was one stone. Says the Gemara in Chulin, Melamed, which teaches us, Shehoyu Avonim Mariva Zuimzu, that the stones were arguing with each other. Zayse Meris Alai and Yathzadik Hizreshe, Zayse Meris Alai and Yathzadik Hizreshe, that each, every stone wanted that Yaakov Avinu should use him as, normally it's understood to be a pillow or as the major vehicle of defense. So the Rebbe Yishlam miraculously turned all the stones into one stone. V'zeu shenema, says the Gemara, and that now makes sense, the continuation of the pasuk, where the pasuk carries on and says, V'yashkem Yaakov v'boker, that when Yaakov got up in the morning, v'yikachesu even ashesom mirash esov, he took that one stone, which some mirash esov, and he made it into a memorial. We all know the story. Rashi brings the story on the Chumash. But what was the point of the exercise? I mean, just because you've got a couple of stones or having a fight, therefore you have to do something which is totally outside of the realms of nature. Miracles usually have a reason. Right? So when the Rishon does something which is mi'al derech ha-teva, which is supernatural, then there obviously must be some sort of logic or some sort of rationale that's lying behind it as to why the Rishon is doing this. So here you've got a couple of obnoxious stones, right, who can't live peacefully with each other and are fighting around. So the Rishon says, whatever that means, but that's what Chazal tell us. And so the Rishon comes and says, you know what, I'll make a miracle and we'll solve the problem. Well, what was the miracle? What was the necessity for this miracle? And the Sfarim write that there was a moral to the story which the Ribbono Shel Olam was trying to tell Yaakov Avinu, and the way that he was telling it to Yaakov Avinu was through the miracle that he did with these stones. And the fact that the whole story of the miraculous unification of the stones into one stone was basically in order to teach Yaakov Avinu something. And Yaakov Avinu got the message. And the raya that he got the message was that he was so despoiled from the message, and he realized that the message is so important that he took the vehicle of the message, namely the individual stones that have been turned into one stone, and he placed it in a certain position to act as a matzeva, to act as a memorial, that he and everybody else should see this stone and should constantly bear in mind the message that the miracle was meant to impart and was meant to give over. Because the way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world is such that there are numerous koichos that exist in the world. And the correct usage of these koichos creates a tremendous amount of power for the person who uses these koichos, and the use of these koichos has a tremendous effect in the world. And if we think about it for a moment, we can list off the top of our heads certain koichos that exist in the world, and the power that lies in the hands of somebody who has this koich, and what he can do with this koich. Take money. Money is something very powerful. With money you can build worlds and you can destroy worlds. The money gives a person the ability to acquire people as slaves. It also gives you the ability to free people from slavery. When you've got money, you can wage wars. When you've got money, you can kill people and get away with it. When you have money, you can create public opinion. And public opinion controls a lot of issues that are life and death. You have money, you can make people happy. You have money, you can also make people very unhappy. It's a very powerful vehicle. Knowledge is a very powerful vehicle. If you use knowledge correctly, you can turn a desert into a Gan Eden. If you think for a moment, what did the world look like a couple of hundred years ago, and what does the world look like today? Well, how did that come about? It came about through the fact that there was a development of knowledge. Every time you walk into an office or walk into a bank, think for a moment how complicated it was to run a bank when there were no computers. Remember the amount of paper that was needed, and everything had to be done by hand. The concept of communication, how difficult it was to communicate even 50 years ago, 60 years ago, where a telephone was considered to be new invention. Good old rotary telephone. You guys don't remember this, where you held the receiver in one hand, right? 30 years ago I was in the Blue Mountains outside of Sydney, Australia, in a hick village, and I wanted to phone my wife. So I went into a public phone box. I can't even describe to you what this thing looked like. There was a box, and you went into this box, you opened the door, and inside there was a good old telephone. But underneath this telephone, there was a long, black, metal, sort of long black box. And it had two buttons on this box with a slot on the top to put the money in. And one next to one button, it had a very big letter A. And next to the other button, it had a very big letter B. So you put your money in the box on top, and you wait about 8 minutes, And the operator comes on the line. And she says to me, press button A. No, sorry. She says, you have to put in a minimum amount of money. Okay, so I put in the minimum amount of money. And you hear it, you know, clunk, clunk, clunk. You hear it going into this metal thing. And then she says, press button A. And you press button A, and it sounded like a jet airliner taking off. There was all sorts of strange noises. As this money went, it probably got taken by a pigeon to the main post office or something. And then she said to me, you will tell me where you want to call, right? And then I'll tell you how much money you have to put in to make the phone call to where you want to call, and then press button B, because then the additional money has to go right the way through the system to get to wherever it has to get to, and then I'll connect you. And she's obviously, you know, sitting somewhere down the road, plugging these things into a switchboard. She says, where do you want to call? I said, Jerusalem. And then she said to me something which to this day I haven't quite got over. She said, Jerusalem where? I said, lady, ever read the New Testament? So she said, yeah. I said, ever heard of Jerusalem? She said, yeah, but I didn't think it existed anymore. I mean, she wasn't far wrong, but today you want to make a phone call. I mean, what's the big deal to make a phone call? I would keep thinking that if my grandmother would watch a fax machine, which is already outdated, right? She would have spent the rest of her life trying to work out how the paper travels from America through the line to Israel. 100%. I can see my bold Miriam Libba saying to me, "V gate the papil." Because she was tremendously spoiled when she got a letter. When she got a letter, it was a heyday for her. And because the English postal system is such that the stamps on the letter have a picture of Her Majesty the Queen, she used to get very excited when she got a letter. And she used to give me the letter and say, was will the Queen from me? What does the Queen want from me? Right? So she was all excited about a letter, because when she was a child, if you had to send something, you sent it with a pigeon. And you tied it to the pigeon's leg and hoped for the best. What would the world look like if there wouldn't be Chochmah? And the Chochmah is very powerful, but Chochmah can be used in a positive way, and Chochmah can be used in a negative way. The Akedah Yitzchak, the Rishon, says that the Pshat in the Pasuk, which we say every day, three times, those of us who stay on after Chazor HaShatz and Shacharis, Dur L'Dur, Yishavach Ma'asecho, the Akedah Yitzchak teaches the Pasuk and explains the Pasuk, Dur L'Dur, Yishavach Ma'asecho. So we normally understand it, Dur L'Dur, Yishavach Ma'asecho, that each generation will be Mishabeach, will praise Ma'asecho, Yud Rebbeinu Mishlanam's acts. He says, B'chol Dur V'Dur, each and every generation, Mashbichin Yosef V'Yosef Ma'aseh Hashem. Each generation is Mashbiach, each generation improves by using its Chochmah, the raw material that the Rebbeinu Mishlanam created the world with. The ability to work, right? The kirch of Aveda, the kirch of being able to work, is also very powerful. If people wouldn't work, then nothing would happen and nothing would develop. However, say the Sforim, if you take all the kirchas that exist in the world, there is one kirch which is much, much more powerful than any of the other koichas that exist. And that is the koich of Achdus, the koich of being a unified group. That koich is more powerful than any other koich. When people go to do something, when people get involved in a certain project, or they want to create something, and they do it in a unified manner, if they do it ba'achdus, there's nothing that can stop them. The facts of history show that nations that are unified win wars. Nations that have internal strife and go out to war lose the war. And that's true of every single nation, that they can't achieve anything if there's internal conflict, if there's individual groups, each one vying for his position. By Klal Yisrael, it's even more emphatic, this concept. Chazal say, Atem nitzovim hayoim kulchem, lifnei Hashem, says the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Nitzovim. Amos atem nitzovim, when will you be able to withstand pressure from the outside? Kishetiyu aguda achas, when you'll be unified, when you'll be together. As it says, kulchem, atem nitzovim, when will you be nitzovim, established, standing, surviving, kulchem, when you are all together. And Chazal carry on, and Chazal say, because b'noeg shebo'olam, it's well known, it's a fact, it's a metzius, that if you have a bunch of twigs from a tree and you try and break them, it's difficult. But if you take each individual one, even a child can break each individual one. It's when you put them together that it becomes a problem to break them. And the fact is that the history of Klal Yisrael in the last 3,000 years proves conclusively that problems always arose, and Klal Yisrael were always menutzachim, were always defeated when there was internal strife, when there was internal conflict. But when they were unified, this didn't happen. I once heard from Chaim Shmulevitz a very, very interesting diuk. And he used to say this every year on three or four occasions. And one of the occasions when he used to talk about this was always Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur used to talk very strongly about this. But he used to always quote the pasuk in Parshas B'chukosai. Parshas B'chukosai, the brochus and the klolus, right? What is one of the brochus? One of the brochus is the following. V'rodfu mikem chamisho mea umeo mikem revova yodoifu. Five will be able to chase 100, and 100 will be able to chase 10,000. So Rav Chaim asks a very posh question. It's not proportionate. If five of you chase 100, then the pasuk should continue and say that 100 chase multiply by 20, right? But not 100,000. So what happened here? Said Reb Chaim, that Chazal asked this question. It's a Teres Kohanim. Chazal in Teres Kohanim say, V'kikachu acheshben, V'ha'lo'yatzorich le'yme elon me'a mikem, shnei alofim yodayfu. It should say 100, 2,000, which is the same proportion, 1 to 20. Elo eina doime mu'otin ho'isim v'sateira le'merubin ho'isim v'sateira. When there's a group, it doesn't work proportionately. In other words, when there's a small group of people doing something, there's a small unified group, they can achieve a certain amount. If there's a bigger group of people who are unified, it doesn't achieve in proportion. It achieves way above the proportion, because the more people that are unified together, the more achievement that there is, but not proportionally, it'd be totally out of proportion. And Reb Chaim is medayek, a terrific diuk in a Gemara. There's a famous Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Mamhei on the base where the Gemara says the following: Omar Chizkiyah, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said the following: Yochel ani lifte es kol ha'olam kuloi min hadin miyom shenivreisi ad ato. If I wanted to, in other words, I have enough zchuyes, I have koyach atfila, that I could make sure that everybody would be zeicher bedin who lived from the point in time that I was born until today. Ve'ilmole be'eliezer b'ni imi, and if I had Eliezer, my son, with me, miyom shenivra ha'olam ad achshav, we could have patted everybody min hadin from the day in which the world was created until today. Ve'ilmole Yosef ben Uzio imanu, and had we had Yosef ben Uzio with us, miyom shenivra ha'olam ad seifai, from the beginning of the world until the end of the world. Says Rav Chaim again, it's not proportionate. It's way out of whack. Why? Says Rav Chaim, look at the language of the Gemara. What did he say, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? Ilmole Eliezer b'ni imi. Together with me. Unified with me. In other words, the minute you have two people who are united, what they can achieve is completely disproportionate to what one person can achieve. It doesn't double itself. It goes out of whack completely in terms of the power of what this can do. At that time, when the story of the miracle with the stones happens, Yaakov Avinu is in the worst possible situation. He's running away from Esau, who's trying to kill him. And why is Esau trying to kill him? Because Yaakov Avinu got some brachas, which are very normal brachas anybody would want, right? Tal HaShemayim, Mishmanei Oretz. He manages to run away with the few possessions that he has, at which point they get stolen from him by Esau, that he remains basically on the run from his brother who's trying to kill him, without any financial means whatsoever. And Vayifka b'makamahu v'yolen shom, and he reached a certain place and he decides to go to sleep there. Why? Ki bo hashemesh, because the sun has set. To which Chazal say, ki bo hashemesh shoko shimshoi v'ha'olam choshach ba'adoi. The sun set for him. In other words, the world became dark for him. He was in a situation of total desperation. Vayikach me'avne amokim v'yosem mirasha yisov. He had nothing else to protect himself with other than a few stones that he found around there. And then, vayikach me'avne amokim v'yosem yisov, and what happens? They begin to argue with each other. V'kol achas ameres olai yaniach tzadik zeres roishoi. The Rebbeinu Shlaim says to him, I'm bringing you into a matzav which you should know is a maisa ovus, which is a simon labonim. This is a matzav which is continuously going to repeat itself within Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael time and time again are going to find themselves in this situation. Klal Yisrael are constantly beginning to run away, are going to be running away from Esau, and they're constantly going to get away by the skin of their teeth. And they're constantly going to be pogroms. And they're constantly going to be v'sholchu yodom b'mamonam. They're constantly going to be deprived of financial means. And in such a situation, the natural tendency is that everybody becomes very protective of the little that they have. And everybody becomes very careful about their own turf. And everybody says, Allah yaniach tzadik es roishei. I'm doing the right thing. My way is the right way. That's the nature and tendency of what happens when people are under stress, when people are under pressure. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no way. in which you're going to be able to survive, if that's the way you behave. And in fact, along come Chazal, and Chazal say, how many stones were there there? 12. Representative of the 12 children that Yaakov Avinu, the Shiftei Kol, that Yaakov Avinu is going to have. Because if there's going to be this conflict going on, then there's no future for Klal Yisrael. And Vayashkein Yaakov Aboike, when Yaakov gets up in the morning, and he sees that the stones became one, he understood immediately what the message was that the Rebbeinu Shlomo was trying to give him, and therefore Vayikachasho Evan Hashesom Mirash Esov. He took that Evan, which was the Ichud, the unification of all the Avonim that were arguing, and Vayosem Eisem Etzei, and made it into a memorial, because he decided that's a lesson that has to be learned, and that's a lesson that has to be kept. And what did he say? This Evan, which I am now making as a memorial, yeah, it should be Beis Elikim. It should be the house of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What makes it the house of the Ribbono Shel Olam? If there is a realization of the fact that one has to be one unit and one has to be together, then there is a matzav of Beis Elikim. Then you can call it a Beis Elikim. In the same way as the Ribbono Shel Olam's singularity in the world is the fact that Hashem Echad, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is one, so too Klal Yisrael, if they want to survive, have to be one. They have to be able to unite together. And Yaakov Avinu completes his life. Yaakov Avinu goes through the numerous events of his life, the tzaras that he has, the stories that happened to him that we mentioned before, and he's now dying, and he calls his children together and he wants to give them his final message before he dies. What's the first thing that he does? The first thing that he does is he says to them, let me tell you what the most important thing is. The most important thing is Heosfu. That is the most important thing. Heosfu. Assemble together. Gather together. Be like one. And if you will do that, then Agid lachem es asher yikra eschem ba'achris hayomim. Then I'll be able to tell you what will happen ba'achris hayomim, because then you'll be able to survive until achris hayomim. At which point, Yaakov Avinu suddenly realizes that he can't continue. He can't tell them. Why not? Because they start coming in the Shechina. Because the Shechina has gone away. Why did the Shechina leave him? If the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted that Yaakov Avinu shouldn't be Megala to his children the time of coming of Mashiach, then the Ribbono Shel Olam could have found many ways to stop him from revealing it, and didn't have to come on to the fact that he had to take the Nevuah away from Yaakov Avinu, after Yaakov Avinu is about to say it, which is obviously a very embarrassing situation, and a very difficult thing for Yaakov Avinu to face. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam should have made the Hashgacha in such a way that Yaakov Avinu shouldn't even want to tell them that. Yet we find that the Shechina disappeared from Yaakov, and that he didn't have Nevuah at a previous point in time as well. When was that? Chazal tell us, and Rashi brings it, that Vatchi Ruach Yaakov, that the spirit of Yaakov came to life after he finds out that Oid Yosef Chai, in last week's parsha, that Yosef is alive. Rashi explains, what does it mean that the spirit of Yaakov came up, became alive? Says Rashi, Sheshol Solav Ashchina Shepir Shamimenu, that the Shechina, which had disappeared from him until this point in time, now that he found out that Yosef was alive, returned to him. Ruach HaKodesh and Istalko Mimenu Sholso Olavaisa Shah. Why is it that the Shechina left him? Wasn't it enough tzoras for Yaakov Avinu that Yosef disappears and he thinks that Torah of Yosef, an animal, killed him? Why does he have to get this additional slap in the face from the Ribbono Shel Olam that the minute that Yosef disappears, he loses his nevuah? Says the Rambam in Shmoyne Prokim, in Perek Zion, Ba'avur ha'anocha v'hadaigo shel Yaakov Avinu kol yemei yisavlo el Yosef, because of the worry and the sadness that Yaakov Avinu had because of the disappearance of Yosef, nistalkum imenu ruach hakodesh, the ruach hakodesh disappeared, ashen isbasa b'chayov, until he found out that he was still alive, and then batchi ruach Yaakov, and it came back to him. Because ein hanavua shayra ela lei mitech atzvus v'lei mitech atzvus ela mitech simcha. Because nevua is only mitech simcha. There can't be nevua mitech atzvus. And exactly the same thing happened here to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu said, "Hey Osfu, I want you to gather together and become united." And in which way that will make sure that the Gula will come. And if there is no Achdus, then the Gula is not going to come. And then Yaakov Avinu starts thinking to himself. And Yaakov Avinu says to himself, is that really a practical request? 12 individuals, each with their own personality, each with their own characteristics, are they really going to be able to unite and to act as one? And in fact, we see from the way in which Yaakov Avinu describes each and every one of his children when he's giving them the brachas, that he understood very clearly the different personalities that existed amongst them. Right? He knew clearly that Reuven was Pachas Kamayim. He knew clearly that Shimon the Levi were Klei Chomos. Mechurei Seyem. He knew that Yehuda was Doma La'aria. He knew that Zvulun was Shoyef Lishkoin Al-Khayf Yomim. The Yisachar was Chamer Goram. Right? He knew all the different personalities that were involved here. At which point he got a tremendous pachad. Is it really practical to ask these people that, hey Osfo, that they should become one unit? And the minute there's pachad, and the minute there's fear that maybe it's not going to happen, there's atzvus. And the minute there's atzvus, the nevuah goes away. It's nistalkom imenu shechina. They weren't fools, the Bnei Yaakov. The Bnei Yaakov understood what was going on here, because they saw what happened. They saw that Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell them something, and then all of a sudden he couldn't because the Shechina was nistalik for him. And they knew about the Evan and the Matseva, because this was one of the main messages that Yaakov Avinu was trying to get across. That's why he made it as a Matseva. So they said to him, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Shema Yisrael. In other words, listen. Yisrael meaning Avinu, Yisrael meaning Yaakov Avinu. You're asking what guarantee is there that we're going to be able to keep together because we're all such different personalities. Calm down. There is one Nakuda, one ideal which unites us all together. Notwithstanding the fact that we are all different, and notwithstanding the fact that we all do have different personalities. We're all ma'minim in the Rabbeinu Shalom, we're all mukhan to be meisa nefesh for the Rabbeinu Shalom. And you yourself told us that where Everybody unites around one uniform concept, then it becomes a base alikim. In other words, you can have different personalities, you can have different characteristics. But if there is one major ideal which everybody is focusing upon, then there's no problem. Then there can be unity. And in the same way that the Nevuah came back to Yaakov Avinu the first time, Amar Vayechi Ruach Yaakov, after he finds out that Yosef is alive, so here as well, the minute he hears the Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad from his children, so he turns back to a matzav of Simcha, and the Nevuah comes back to him. And what does the Nevuah tell him when it comes back? Bor Shem Kavod Malchusei L'Olam Vaed. In other words, that the Haftacha that the Ribbono Shel'Olam will beguile you is the Haftacha that will be Mekuyam, because man calls man, you are Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and the Ribbono Shel'Olam's Malchus, which is going to bring Mashiach, will also come. When it will happen, that Nevuah never came back to him for a variety of reasons, whatever they are. Chaim Shmulevitz used to constantly talk in reference to a yeshiva on this nakuda, on this point, and he used to say of a very horrifying story. The Mir yeshiva was the only yeshiva in Eastern Europe pre-World War II that managed to survive the Holocaust in its entirety. The entire yeshiva managed to survive by getting visas to Japan. Right, the story's been written up, the books which have been written up about it already, how it happened, it's an open mess, open miracle. And they managed to get visas, and the entire yeshiva travelled by train through Poland, Russia, to the port of Vladivostok on the Black Sea, and from there to eventually to Japan. The train journey was I think close to a week. Reb Chaim told the Bochurim, and he used to constantly repeat this, that there is a concept of a koyach hatzibur, that, as we saw, when a group is united, the power that they have goes out of whack completely to what the power of an individual is. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam, by granting us these visas, is obviously showing us that the group, that the yeshiva, should be saved. But only those who are part of the group will be saved. Therefore, nobody is allowed to leave the group. And even though we're going to be passing through villages and we're going to be passing through towns and the train is going to stop in places where your parents live and you know that you will never see them again, nobody is to get off the train. Don't be perished from the tzibur, because the whole schus kiyum of survival is that you are part of the tzibur. If you are perished from the tzibur, you will not survive. And Reb Chaim used to say that there were bachrim who didn't listen to him. There were bachrim who the train stopped for 3-4 hours in the village and their parents lived at home in that village, and they said, okay, it takes me 5 minutes to get to the house. My house is next to the railway line. I'll run home, I'll see my parents, and I'll come back. He said, all those boys who got off the train, not one of them came back. Not one of them survived the war. Because they didn't have the schus of the tzibur. And Reb Chaim, in my days, when I learned in the Mir Yeshiva in 1967, just after the Six-Day War, when the Shmuz used to say that if you learn in the yeshiva, and you are a masmid she'ein kedugmosay, you are the biggest masmid in yeshiva, but you don't learn in the Beis Medrash, you learn in the Yetzer Sforim, which in the Mir Yeshiva that time was in the, or you learn in the Ezra's Noshim, you should say, you will not have Hatzlacha, because you're being perished min hatzibur. Everybody has their own personality. Everybody has Midas, and everybody has, most people have Chesroinus. That's the way of the world. And very often you have two people or three people or four people who have opposing personalities. You have the guy who's very reserved and you have the guy who's very extroverted. Right? You have the guy who's very quiet and you have the guy who's very loud. You have the guy who's very uncouth and you have the guy who's very well-mannered. Right? The conceptions can be opposing. Right? But that doesn't mean that one can't be a unified group. If one understands that at the end of the day, to achieve the objective that one's trying to achieve, you will sometimes need to be laid back, and you will sometimes need to be aggressive. And therefore, at the point in time when the group has to be aggressive, we'll use the guy who's aggressive. And at some point in time when we have to be laid back, we'll use the guy who's laid back. If everybody understands what the other person's koichos hanefesh are, and everybody works together as a group, then it's shaykh to achieve things. But if everybody's pulling in their own direction, then nothing will happen. The Gemara, Chaim used to say over, the Gemara used to say that the most prestigious generation that existed in the history of Klal Yisrael was the generation of Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. The Gemara says Sheker Achein is one generation, of the Hevel Ayefi is another generation. V'Yisha Yiras Hashem Hisisala, that's the generation of Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi, where they were Baidik from one end of Eretz Yisrael to the other end of Eretz Yisrael, and they couldn't find a child who wasn't a Baki in the most complicated halachas of Tyrus. And the Gemara says, what was so special about that generation over and above previous generations? Says the Gemara, that generation was so poor that shisha miskansim betalis echol. Six people had to use the same talis to cover themselves up with, because they couldn't afford each one to have his own talis. Sreb Chaim used to say, what's pshat in the Gemara? Sreb Chaim used to say the following. Next time it's raining, go out in the street and watch two people walking down the street holding one umbrella between them. But don't look at the people, Chaim used to say. He used to say, look at the umbrella. And you'll see a very interesting thing. It's pouring with rain, there are two people walking along, and they're both holding the same umbrella. He says, if you watch the umbrella, you'll see that the umbrella keeps going like this. Why? Because the natural tendency of each person is to pull the umbrella to cover himself. If you've got shisha miskansi b'talis echel, if you've got six people who are covering themselves with the same talis, what does that mean? That means everybody's pushing the talis towards the other person. If everybody's pushing the talis towards the other person, then six people can get underneath one talis. If everybody's pulling the talis to themselves, it doesn't cover anybody. So the B'chaim, what was the uniqueness of the Dor of Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi? Everybody wanted to help the other guy. It was achdus. It was a unit. And the way of the world is that the acts of a person indicate what's going on inside him. Known in the secular world as body language. You can tell from the way in which a person acts where he's at in his mind. That's the metzias. And if one wants to be masliach in a small group of people like we have here, then the only way that we're going to be masliach is that everybody's acting together. Right? Notwithstanding the fact that one guy's a bigger masmid and one guy's a lesser masmid, and one guy's got these issues and one guy's got the issues, and one guy's got this type of depression, the other guy's got that type of depression. Right? So okay, we've got 32 guys, and we've got 32 different types of depressions. There are more types of depressions than 32, and we have 50 guys, but I have 50 guys with different types of depressions. But taking that into consideration, at the end of the day, everybody's here for the same reason. Everybody's trying to achieve the same objective by Shreya Shom in his own way. And everybody has what to contribute. But it only works if everybody's together and everybody's giving to each other. But if you're going to be a loner and you're going to act on your own, and you're going to do your own thing, you don't get anywhere at all. So if the entire Beis HaMedrash is sitting here in the Beis HaMedrash, some are davening, some are looking at their cell phones, some are contemplating the panels on the ceiling, which I've never quite worked out why they're so interesting. You get guys over hours are looking at these, you know, this blank stare in there. What are the great philosophical truths that lie in Baruch Klein's pieces of ceiling? I don't know. But there are guys who spend hours during davening. The ceiling is looking at them. And you've got one guy reading books in the library.